Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. This bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, a week has passed, and last I looked, America is still there, just below the 49th parallel. Before consigning, though, the Democratic Party to its richly deserved political ignominy, we'll do something Barack Obama himself swore off of and look back to better move forward, perhaps. Jim Kavanaugh is a former college professor, now publishing political and social analysis as the polemicist on Substack. And as of our last discussion, way back in July of 2023, a whole nother era, he's making videos on the same topics at Rumble. His articles appear on occasion online at the Grenville Post, counterpunch.org, and of course at The Polemicist at Substack, where I found his recent pieces, Debt Ceiling Nonsense and Why I Won't Vote. Welcome back to the program, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Jim, before getting to the reelection of Donald Trump and its correlative descent of America to the seventh ring of hell, I read your note of thanks and farewells recently to the hosts of Sputnik Radio's The Critical Hour and Political Misfit programs. Jim, what happened? What happened to Sputnik in America?
Well, you know, as I understand it, what happened is that the sanctions came to bite them in the sense that they couldn't make the right financial transactions to continue. That's the story I heard from the people at the station. So that they had to stop. You know, look, it's a strange situation. I mean, these guys, Garland Nixon's a very good friend of mine now, Wilmer Leon, they became friends. I was on their show all the time. I know John Kiriakou and Michelle Witt. I didn't know personally, but I met John Kiriakou and I was on Michelle and John's show, Political Misfits. And it was great fun, and they had a great light up, and they had great guests on that those programs and on the channel in general. They had good, exciting discussions, and it's kind of so ridiculous and bad that the only place to do that was on a radio station that was being financed out of Russia. You know what I mean? It is silly, and you say this shouldn't be like that. We should be talking on to American people on, you know, I mean, I'm in the United States, so American people on the United States and American channels. And we can do that online and on my YouTube and Rumble channels, and this I can write on it. But you know, this was a great outlet. The Sputnik shows were really good, and it's just, you know, we were dependent on whoever was financing that in Russia. It's partly by the Russian government, maybe partly by some oligarch. And at the end of the day, they have the sanctions that make it difficult for them to transfer money. Really simple as that. So that's what I know about that. That's why it went. Nobody, I don't think the people behind it in Russia were trying to put a stop to it for any substantive political reason. They just couldn't continue to finance it given the sanctions.
Well, we saw that with RT, yeah, as well. You know, that was a couple of years ago. I'm surprised that Sputnik lasted as long as it did.
I know. They had different American companies they were working through. So they were able to get away with it for a longer time. Yeah, RT went right down. They had good shows. They had Abby Martin and Chris Hedges, you know. These are American thinkers and commentators and analysts who should be on American media. But so they winnowed away our visibility a little bit, more than a little bit, but here we are.
Now, when you say that this was a function of the sanctions, the financial sanctions placed by the United States against Russia. But then when you look, you mentioned Chris Hedges. Now, Chris has been canceled at The Real News. He saw all of his shows erased from his YouTube site. YouTube. I mean, this is more than just Russian-American politics, I would say. Do you have the feeling that the net is closing in on free speech in the U.S.?
Absolutely. Not just in the U.S., but around the world. This is a crisis, a part of the crisis of legitimacy for Western capitalism, and especially, and this is, I've said this for many years, much, if not most, of the driving force behind trying to censor the internet is the fear of the Zionists, that their narrative is being disrupted, and it is. It's been completely demolished in the past year. And that happened very suddenly and very quickly and very decisively, I think. And so there is an assault and a program throughout the world, the Digital Services Act in Europe, the Anti-Terrorism and Act in England, which has gotten Richard Medhurst, Sarah Wilkinson, Asa Winstanley raided, arrested, etc. And they're trying to bring it to the United States. They get on there and say, we have to do away with TikTok. I mean, they did that for the reason that TikTok was undermining the Zionist narrative. And so this is coming. I'm writing a piece right now on this, a speech that Trump gave a few days ago, fiercely defending free speech, and I'm going to do away with the censorship cartel, and I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen, and that doesn't happen, that doesn't happen. And we also have to require that social media platforms do nothing illegal, like child manipulation or promoting terrorism. So, as I say, let me fire up my 18-wheeler because I can drive right through that loophole. Promoting terrorism is going to be the replacement for misinformation and disinformation that the Biden administration used. And this is what they did in England. Medhurst and Wilkinson and Winstanley were arrested for supporting groups that have been identified by the British government as terrorists. So that's supporting, and that's what Trump is telling us in this speech. Well, I'm going to do away with all this misinformation and disinformation, but I'm going to require that platforms be more thorough in not supporting, not allowing people to promote terrorism. The word promote is a wonderful word. And in the United States, as opposed to almost any other country in the world, we do have the First Amendment. And the First Amendment, you know, despite what Kamala Harris or Tim Walz or Donald Trump says, allows us to promote causes that are nasty, bad. It allows hate speech. It allows misinformation, disinformation. It allows us to say, I'm promoting the cause of the Palestinian resistance, armed and unarmed, whether you want to call it terrorist or not. Just like it allows Zionists to promote the cause of Zionism, even though the leaders of the Zionist movement identified themselves as terrorists. This we have in the United States, but they're going to try and find a way. They're going to try to use this notion of terrorism, promoting terrorism, as a vehicle for squashing dissent in the United States, especially dissent against Zionism. That's what they're really afraid of.
Well, as well as Richard Medhurst and Asa Winstanley, Kit Clarenberg, an Englishman, was the first one to get nailed by this Section 12 in the UK. But he is writing primarily for an American organization, the Gray Zone, and the support, the so-called support that they're offering these so-called terrorist regimes isn't financial support or anything like that. It's just writing things that are perceived to be supportive of them.
Right. The government has a case to say we can prevent you from materially supporting any organization. For whatever reason, if they have a reason to give, that's another case. But in the United States, we have the First Amendment, and it is very strong. And there isn't anything like it, you know, and I'm all for it, you know. And we are allowed to support politically, in writing, in speech, to support the cause of causes that are terroristic, whether anybody describes them as terrorist or not. And, you know, ANC was terrorist. Nelson Mandela was a terrorist in American law from 2000 till 2008. So writing something supporting Nelson Mandela was promoting terrorism until 2008 under that definition. So, you know, we have to protect this. And Donald Trump is getting up there claiming to be the protector of it. But while he's claiming to be the protector of it, he's telling you the new rubric they're going to use to crush it, which is promoting terrorism. And the word promoting is important, again, because as you say, okay, it's one thing to say you can't be doing something terrorist, but promoting, that is supporting, politically supporting, promoting the cause of, that's something you can do. and you can do, and that's what they're going to try and sneak in. Trump administration will try and sneak in promoting terrorism as a substitute for what the Biden administration did with disinformation and misinformation.
Well, and how long before not supporting the opponents of the perceived terrorism is perceived as supporting? If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jim Kavanaugh. Jim is a former college professor. He publishes political and social analysis at The Polemicist on Substack.com. We're getting to his recent article there at Substack, Debt Ceiling Nonsense and Why I Won't Vote. Well, Jim, can we start at the latter? Why sure. You won't vote, and I'm assuming that you followed through if you took the trouble to write an essay about it. Why didn't you vote in the last federal election, or at least vote for president?
No, I didn't vote. You know, it's a tough thing. Look, I understand. I really do understand the value of voting. You know, I've been in political election observation situations, and I've seen populations that are hungry to be able to have a free vote and hungry to do it. And I think it's impossible, really, to I don't think, you know, I consider myself a Marxist and a revolutionary socialist, so I don't think voting is going to, you know, be the ultimate vehicle for change. But I think it is absolutely necessary to have the ability to vote, to have any kind of nonviolent path towards change. You need the ability to vote, okay, and to vote in reform candidates, single issue reforms, et cetera, okay? There are a number of problems in the American system. And off the bat, you can do it on a substantive political point. That is, the American election system is clearly controlled by the donors. You know, they decide, it's like a TV show, and they decide first of all, for the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, I gotta tell you that. The Republican Party is more Democratic than the Democratic Party. This is why Trump was able to get in. But certainly the Democratic Party, and for the most part, money decides who gets to run, okay? And who can run a decent, especially at the presidential level, who can run a decent enough campaign to have a chance. All right. And then they bring the public out for audition, the candidates out for auditions in the primaries. And then you get to choose which of the candidates they pre-selected really to be able to run. And for the most part, it's the same donors that are donating to both candidates. That's my favorite slogan in 2016 and in this year was, I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton or Kamala Harris or her donor. Because Donald Trump donated to both of them. And so this is that's the situation. So in a certain sense, that's kind of the W.E. Du Bois 1956, I won't vote, because it's a rigged game in that sense. Okay. Now, what you want to be able to say is, what about a third party? And, you know, you had Jill Stein running, and you have socialist parties running, and I have done that, and I don't begrudge anybody who does. I see why you do it. If you had the possibility of registering your vote for a third party and saying, this is, you know, what we really want, then that would be something, okay? You get a third party up to a certain percentage, and you get, but of course, in the American legal system, the way the legal system is done around the electorate, you can't ever get, the third parties can't get on the ballots. It's legally impossible for them to, you know, the obstacles for them of even succeeding on those terms are extremely difficult. But the kicker for me, and I've been studying it since 2008, really 2012. I wrote a long article about it. I wrote about it in 2016, 2020. You know, what the 2000 election did, which everybody was, you know, we lost the popular vote, won the electoral vote, and all kinds of hijinks in the election system. So we're going to change the electorate. We're going to fix the electoral system. And how are we going to do that? We're going to have the Have America Vote Act, the HAVA Act, and give out contracts to electronic voting machine vendors. Yeah. So now you have most of the electorate in the United States in a presidential election is voting on electronic voting machines that are privatized, that have proprietary software and firmware. And this has been shown. Look at my article. This is, I have a video, part of a video from 2008, I think, showing, or 2012 or 14, showing electronic voting machines that would guarantee, well, this can't be hacked. The manufacturer said this can't be hacked, and the vote and the election official said, no, we know this. This can't be. This isn't connected to the internet. And then they show you on the screen. They just in 10 minutes they produce a result that's different from the vote. What the votes were, and you have the election officials crying, saying this is not the election I think it is. So what I'm saying is we have a fundamentally uncertain system in the sense that you have no reasonable certainty that the vote you cast will be counted for the person for whom you cast it. And the electronic voting machines with third parties, the third party ballots become a kind of electoral slush fund that can be moved around. So you have a swing state with a close vote, and 5% of the vote goes to the Libertarians and the Greens and the Reform Party and blah, blah, blah. They can take 2% of that vote and move it anywhere they want. They can move it to Kamala or to Donald, and you'll never know it. And you'll never know it. It's undetectable. So there should be no proprietary voting systems. Everything should be public. No proprietary software. The technology now should be used so that there's live stream video on every ballot box from the beginning to the end. Okay, and we're relying on QR codes. And you know, ballots have to be the gold standard is hand counted paper ballots. And there's no reason you can't do that.
Paper and pencil. I used to say that to my American friends about the Canadian system because that's the way it used to be done here until recently. Now they've got these photo reading machines where it goes into a black box and who knows, maybe it's all honest, but maybe the machines are just not working properly. Who knows? In your article, you say you didn't vote not just because I consider genocide a deal breaker and refuse to choose between the clowns and criminals offered up by the duopoly. But also, I mean, reasons you offer. In Germany, I just saw an article that a snap election that was considered by pressured onto the ruling party there that's profoundly unpopular right now is not going to happen because Germany doesn't have enough paper. This was the reason to have elections, because I guess they have paper elections. But you talk when you did your election monitoring of being in Africa and watching people vote the old-fashioned way, and they were a little abashed by it. And you're saying, no, wait, at least you know who you're voting for. Palestine, I beg your pardon. Yeah.
And I said, we sat in this classroom, and the teacher, who was the, election officer, took out every ballot, showed it to everybody. Everybody agreed on everything. And this woman who was sitting next to me from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who kept saying, oh, you must think we're so backward. You're just counting like this. You must have much more sophisticated process. I said, I got to tell you something. The last two elections, 2000, 2004, at that point, in my country, I don't know who won them. I know who won this election. I am sure of it. The votes were the ballots were counted in front of everybody, and the result was done in the precinct and posted on the precinct publicly from that moment. There should be no moving ballots around to count them in some central place. Why do you do that? There's no reason for that. That's just introducing the possibility of fraud. And they are deliberately creating a system in which you enable fraud in certain ways. So that's, as I said, the first time I went to Palestine in 1996 and 2006, that example I gave was 2006. In 1996, cast the ballots, the Israeli army came around and picked them up in a van, in a black truck, literally, and took them off to a central trading. So, that's what it's like when you're putting something into an electronic machine. I don't know what the Israeli army did with those ballots in that van. It's black box voting. But in the second time, they did it the right way, and everybody was, this is the most honest election I've seen. So anyway, it can be done. And we can use technology to help us do it. As I say, now you can live stream everything. You can see where ballots are where ballot boxes are all the time. And you can see who's counting. So there should be no problem. But instead of it's very simple, but instead they make it complicated. Oh, we got this proprietary software, some of which fractionalizes votes, actually breaks votes up into fractions for some reason. The leftists were all over this between 2000 and 2016 and 2020, even really. They were all over in 2004. Bob, when John Kerry lost Ohio and there was a lot of hijinks, and they by law they were able to go look at the ballots. They went to see the ballots and they had them in a warehouse and they said, no, we can't let you in. The FBI told us there was a terrorist attack against us and we can't let anybody in. The FBI said, we never said anything like that. So, and John Kerry had won Ohio, he would have won the election. And there was a whole bunch of articles by leftists about how hinky that election was with John Kerry. And Barbara Boxer and the Democrats, backed up by civil rights activists and lawyers, went in on January 5th or 6th when the vote to certify came and refused to certify. She said, I'm going to refuse to certify the electoral vote, just like Donald Trump did, except they didn't bring the pitchforks. Donald Trump brought the pitchforks. But why didn't they? What's worse than losing, defrauding an election? The Democrats thought, and with good reason, in 2004, that they had been defrauded the election, but they didn't call a demonstration about it. They didn't want to bring people to the streets about it because they'd rather keep the system the same, the status quo.
I hate to disabuse the people in the States about the third party, but we have that up in Canada and it's in Europe as well. And it hasn't made any difference in Canada. A third party hasn't won election here ever in 150 something years or whatever it is. So having a third party is a bit of a stalking horse, I would argue. But the money part of it, I can tell you, I disagree with you, Jim. I know who won the American election and I know who wins every yes. American election. Yeah. I think it was Miriam Adelson won this one, but at least she and her cohorts. What about this idea that a foreign or a binational with bags of money can just walk in and buy a president?
Disgraceful. And you're right. We cannot have real democratic elections, real power of the people speaking, until you get rid of this money. Miriam Adelson gave $100 million, but you know what? Kamala Harris outraised and outspent Donald Trump by a lot. She had Chaim Saban, who's the big Democratic Zionist candidate. I have only one issue, and it's Israel, who used to partner up with Sheldon Adelson to do all kinds of projects like Friends of the IDF benefits that would raise $50 million in a night to assuage the poor IDF soldiers who are so tired from killing Palestinians. But anyway, so what I'm saying is that there's money all over it, okay? And we saw, and Donald Trump said, my other article called Presidential Catastrophe, or the one about Bobby's Bounce, Donald Trump said, when I was in the White House, I used to have Sheldon and Miriam Adelson. They were in the White House more than anybody else who worked there. And they would tell me what to do, and I would do it. And he literally would say that. And because you do whatever the hell the donors tell you to do. So this is announced. He was proud of it. And so this is the system we have. I think it's worse in the United States in that respect than it is in Canada and some other countries. The level at which money determines the outcomes and all the possibilities, really, in the so-called electoral in the electoral system and the so-called democratic electoral system.
And when it comes to foreign policy, the Canadian government just does what America tells it to do. So yeah. In that sense, it all comes downhill.
That's right.
Jim, we're fast running out of time, but I want to talk to before we run out of time, and we haven't got to some of the points that we were going to talk about, but that's the way it often happens around here. But the appointments. Now, I've been sitting on bated breath, mostly because I have a betting interest, a gentleman's wager interest on whether or not Marco Rubio will, in fact, be treated like Lucy treats Charlie Brown, or will he actually get in? And everywhere I read, it's about Rubio getting the job as what we call the foreign ministry, but the what is Secretary of State. I haven't seen any confirmation. I even went to Rubio's website, and there's a long string of him congratulating all the other appointments. Great job, Don. A+ for this and all this. But I'm pretty sure that his nomination or confirmation would be at the top if it had happened. So am I right that this hasn't happened yet?
Oh, I'm doing the same thing you are. Yeah, I've been looking for confirmation of it because they seem so certain of it, but I haven't seen it yet.
I've never seen so much media about a confirmation that hasn't happened as if it has happened, and it's coming from all quarters. Is this a coordinated media effort, do you think?
Well, there is a lot of lobbying by media in this phase when people are trying to get in or trying to get certain policies done. Do this media blitz to present it as if that's already been done. It's already been decided. So you have to be careful about this. You know, it's happened. You know, it's happened with other Trump. You know, with Haley and Pompeo, and everybody said they were going to be in it, but they're not. So, you know, we do know, however, who has been nominated is this guy Mike Waltz and Huckabee and Stefanik, Elise Stefanik, and these are terrible, fanatical Zionists. You know, and I mean, Huckabee is and the other guy, the guy who's defense, I forget his name now. You know, these guys are literally, you know, Israel deserves Palestine because it's in the Bible, because God gave it to Abraham, and we can't go back. I mean, this is American foreign policy on the Bible. And you know, these are very dangerous people. And so I don't, and neocons.
Well, this is Pete Hegseth, square-jawed veteran who
I had never heard
makes
of
his before. He butters his bread on Fox News and so forth. He's also a blood and guts, over the top boys kind of guy. As from what I've seen, I got to admit, I'd never heard of the guy before this.
Yeah, neither have I. I just saw some things, some of the things he's been saying and doing, and it's really crazy. And Waltz is a Cheney guy. You know, Mike Waltz is from he worked with Cheney. He wanted to bomb Iraq and bomb Iran. And this guy, Hook, Brian Hook, he's not been named to his post, but he's been supervising the State Department transition. These guys are all, let's bomb Iran. This is John McCain and Cheney, neocon. So I think that a lot of the people who voted for, I know that a lot of people voted for Trump are saying, what the heck, this, he was supposed to get rid of the swamp. And, you know, these are neocon swamp creatures. And certainly if Rubio comes in, it's.
Yeah, well, I just can't see it after he insulted Trump's manhood and everything. I can see Trump dangling him for as long as it takes to before he drops and doing it gleefully. But I guess we'll see. Maybe real politique will take over. We're fast out of time, Jim, but the last thing is that I heard on the radio just briefly before going on that the deadline imposed by the Biden administration on Israel for reestablishing humanitarian aid has come and gone. And the radio said, and I'm not sure if I heard this right, that weapons transfers were going to be halted. Did I hear that right?
Oh, I didn't hear that, and I heard the opposite. I saw yesterday and this morning that the State Department and Blinken and those creepy press guys who speak at the podium were saying, well, Israel took some steps. Right. So we are not going to stop arms transfers now because Israel took some steps in that to meet our requirements, which of course is a load of crap. This is horrible. I don't know what to say. I'm so depressed and horrified by what's going on. I feel so ashamed to be an American, a human being at this point.
You're not alone.
A slaughter. The world is watching a slaughter.
It's not just America though. I mean, the same is true in this country and across Europe. It's frankly unbelievable. And of course, if it was any other country in any other situation, it would never be allowed to continue. Sadly, Jim, that's all the time we got for today. Okay. Can you reiterate your socials so people can look you up?
Best thing to do is to follow or subscribe to me for your paid on Substack, Jim Kavanagh's Substack, The Polemicist. And you can follow me on Twitter at @thepolemicist_. And I am on YouTube and Rumble, and that's where you can find me.
And get on Telegram, you might be charged with being a terrorist if you do that. But and bye-bye MSNBC, but we can talk about that another time maybe. Thanks a lot, Jim, and thanks go out to Eve Engler as well. And I played taps on my way out for the Jewish National Fund in Canada for losing its tax-deductible status. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you having me on.
My great pleasure. That's all I got for this week. Till next time. When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.